Hello and welcome to day two of Connect. This is probably going to be my favorite day because yesterday everyone gets on stage and they say beautiful things, but today you have the actual developers, PMs that work on the products that you've learned about yesterday doing real life demos, and you get to ask them all of the hard questions that weren't asked yesterday. I'm pretty excited.
Excellent.
What are you most excited about?
Oh, well, obviously the .NET talk.
Absolutely. And I'm glad you brought that up because actually the first, we're going to talk about the first four sessions that you're going to look at. Visual Studio development tools from 8 to 9, which is coming up next. The future of .NET and the future of mobile development. And then we'll obviously fill you in as we go, but those are the first three sessions. Most importantly, please make sure to ask your questions. If you go to channel9.msdn.com, you should be able to ask your questions below. Those are the most important things, your questions. We want them. Okay, so again, the first one, Visual Studio development tools. There's been a ton of announcements about Visual Studio. What was your favorite thing about Visual Studio announcements?
Oh, totally VS for Mac. Oh, oh my gosh.
That's pretty exciting. Cool. And I talked to Miguel, and it's not just a bringing up Xamarin Studio.
No,
they've actually included tons of other things.
More things.
Yeah, absolutely.
Amazing.
So what we're going to do is we're going to toss it over to them so you can get the actual real content and not us just talking about what we're excited about. So let's toss it over to them.
All right, thanks guys. Hey everybody, welcome to day two of Connect. I'm Robert Green, I'm the host of the Visual Studio Toolbox show here on Channel 9. And my distinguished panel is Kathy Sullivan and Anthony Cangelosi, Sean McBreen, and Mark Wilson-Thomas. Hey guys.
Good morning.
Hey. How are you doing?
So Kathy, Anthony, and Mark are Visual Studio PMs, and Sean is a Visual Studio Code PM. Yeah. So as Seth said, yes, we have the actual engineers here. So this is gonna be an exciting day. So there were a lot of announcements yesterday, a lot of excitement, cool demos, cool things that were talked about. Let's kind of recap, just kind of have an overview of the Visual Studio family. So we've got Visual Studio, we've got Visual Studio Code, Visual Studio for Mac was talked about and introduced yesterday. So how do we think about these things?
I can take a crack at that. You know, the great thing about yesterday is there were so many more members of the Visual Studio family, and the whole thing that we're trying to do is make sure that, you know, every customer have tools that support the workflows that they desire, the workloads that they're targeting. Obviously, a huge announcement yesterday was Visual Studio for Mac, and that's the sort of second integrated development environment we have. We have Visual Studio, Core Visual Studio, and Visual Studio for Mac. And those tools are really designed to give you a very streamlined, targeted flow for the workloads you're after. Obviously, Visual Studio for Mac is great for ASP.NET development, it's great for mobile development, and it's all complemented with sort of integrated backends like the cloud service for testing. And Visual Studio has a hugely strong heritage of that. And at the same time, where I live and come from with Visual Studio Code, it's really a cross-platform editor. And the idea there is that it's something that can insert neatly into any workflow. So you really can compose a set of tools and experience that's really targeted to the way that you want to work. And those couple of things are very complementary. You know, we see people using both sets of tools together, but we also see people who really like, you know, the command line centric workflows, preferring an editor sometimes. And as I say, if you're building a mobile app, you really want all that design surface, the integrated surface, and that's where the IDEs truly shine. So really great to have the family rounded out. Great to see that we're meeting developers on the platforms that they're developing on. It was fun.
So would you understand or decide which one to use based on the type of project you're doing, based on what you've used in the past?
No, I think it's really about the workflow that you want to adopt and the way that you like working. So for instance, it's possible to do many of the same things in several of the products now. But it's really like I'm working on a Macintosh. I'm very comfortable with working with the command shell. You know, I have a tool chain that sits outside of the development environment as well that I depend upon heavily. Well, that might make you lean towards using the editor-based workflow. And that's certainly true for some of the, say, modern web frameworks that are very command-line centric. On the flip hand, you know, as I say, you might be really trying to optimize a mobile development experience. It's a great example where, hey, look, I want to easily attach to cloud backend with Azure. I want to have designers where I can easily design the forms of my application. And I want that to connect directly into emulators. And I want that to come in all in one package that just works really well together. And that's something that you'd have to do a lot of manual wiring with the editor VS Code, but that's where the IDEs completely shine. Right. So it really it depends on the workflow you're doing, a little bit about the projects, but more about the workflow that you love.
So when you say workflow, you mean I've written something, I want to publish it to Azure. In Visual Studio, I get to right-click, publish to Azure, a dialog comes up, fill out a few things, press publish, And then Visual Studio takes care of all the plumbing and the stuff that me personally, I don't want to have to learn about.
That's the big capital I for integration that's so powerful.
Right. So that's the workflow, right? Yeah. So for me, I trust that the people that wrote it are going to understand what things need to happen in order to take this thing and send it over to Azure, and it just magically works, and that's awesome.
Focusing on
whereas code. Mm-hmm. Others, either because that's how they grew up or because they want more control over the things, or they want to be able to switch out to different tools, they would prefer to drop down into the command line and control a little bit better what's going on. Is that what we mean by workflow?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
So that's on one level how you would decide which one to use.
Yeah.
And of course, you can use them both because we've seen over and over again that you can build
Absolutely.
An application in one, open it in the other, go back and forth.
Yep.
Cool.
Yeah.
All right. So we're going to do some chatting like this. We're going to do some demos. We're going to answer people's questions. Let's take a question right now. Claudio asks, side-by-side installation of 2015 and 27RC Visual Studio is supported?
Yes, it is. And we encourage you to go ahead and do that, too.
Yeah. All right. We're going to talk about setup and installation in a little bit, but we did want to answer some mm-hmm. questions. So let's talk about what's new in the products, shall we? Visual Studio 2017 RC just announced. Latest version of Visual Studio Code just shipped, right?
Yeah, 1.7? 1.7, yeah. Okay. We shipped that a couple weeks ago now, yeah.
And was that on purpose? Was it on purpose to do 1.7 next to 2017, or did we just hit those accidentally?
Completely thought that through.
Totally planned that one? Okay, nice.
And there's an entire session.
We'll be going to hit in future soon.
In the mobile session, they'll be diving a little bit more into Visual Studio for Mac. So we're going to stick mostly to 2017 and code here. Do you want to give us an overview of what some of the new features are?
Man, where do we start? The list is long. I'm too old to remember it all, so I've got my list here to run through. But there's a little of something for pretty much everybody. I mean, Visual Studio has got a ton of new performance enhancements that Kathy's going to talk about in a little bit. Productivity was a big highlight. I mean, when we talk to developers, the two big things they always ask us for is make it faster and make me more productive on my product. And so we tried to hit both of those notes in this particular release. So, I mean, when it starts out from, you know, the inner loop, the editing experience, we have improvements to find all references. IntelliSense is smarter and really knows what you're looking for. We've got new refactorings in the product. We've got new code analyzers that are sitting there analyzing the product as you're going and giving you feedback in the editor, in the error list, telling you how you can make your product and your code better, cleaner, how you get consistent styling across the product. There are architecture analyzers that are making sure that you're following the best coding patterns and practices. I mean, like from a code quality perspective, this is by far the best release that we've had to date. When you go kind of outside of the editing experience, the debugger itself is now a little bit smarter. Things like run to click let you avoid the kind of intermediate breakpoints you do along the way. You can just kind of move yourself down the editor, find the line you want, say run, and it'll skip past all the other lines and get to the line that you want. And as you get there, you'll actually get these new little perf tips that light up right next to that line and say, hey, this line just took 80 milliseconds to run. Okay, great, that's what I was looking for. Or no, that took, you know, a half a second to run. That's not what I expected. Click on it and it pops open the diagnostics mm-hmm. window right next to it, and you get all of that detailed information. You start to really trace down and see where the perf problems are live as you're going, so you're not dealing with these problems later on and you're trying to really kind of manage a whole like backlog and this wall of issues that hit you all at once. From there, when you leave the editor there, you've got things like the new open folder lets you open up a whole body of code. Like if you want to open up your repository before you dive into a specific solution, you can actually open up the folder and get IntelliSense. You can get code understanding and navigation all there. And then you can switch from there quickly into a solution. If you've got one of these repos that's got many solutions, like many of our bigger projects, you can switch between them without actually, you know, having to do the whole file close, file open dance. All that's really a lot smoother now. And actually, probably one of my favorites, one of the top ones that we had on User Voice was wildcard support in our project system. So like, if you can imagine when you're starting to work on larger projects and you have people adding files into the same project at the same time, because a lot of that is done by the designer behind the scenes, you end up with merge conflicts when those project files hit in the middle and you do that merge. And so now, what you can do is actually, there's no longer individual files in the project system. There's just star.cs. And when you drop a set of files into to your folder, the project system will recognize that, and all those files will just load up in your solution. People absolutely have been asking us for that for way too long, and we're really excited to have that one in the product. I don't know, like the productivity list goes on and on, from like roaming repository remotes show up in your start page, so when you move between devices, you can quickly get started. You've got roaming project templates, roaming extensions, and we've got a brand new clone experience for VSTS. I mean, like, productivity is just like coming out of the ears with this product. The mobility stack is another place where we kind of really, really stepped up our game there. So, you know, everything from now the Xamarin integration, they have first class, you've got Ionic and integration for JavaScript development, C++, you get tons of code reuse. I mean, I think Miguel said that, you know, on average, you're seeing like 80% code reuse, right, for your Xamarin projects, which is really, really awesome. The mobile test recorder makes it much easier for unit testing and recording kind of exactly what you want to validate. And then you take that and you push that out to Xamarin Cloud, and now you've got your validation running across thousands of devices, and so you get like the power of, you know, a real major production house in, you know, a small startup, and you get all of that right within VS. And then you know, as you get deeper into the cloud development, microservices is really big, and so you saw a lot of the announcements around Docker support. Mm-hmm. You get like a first full class, you know, F5 experience all the way through. You can debug single containers, multi containers. You mentioned publish. You can actually publish your Docker containers right into app services, which is pretty awesome. You get everything you need for an end to end there, so you can create a new registry there to host your images and push it right into an app service. Nothing that you need to do. It's that kind of magical, you know, capital I in integration that works really well. And then we also, you know, you talked about publish. There's mixed feelings about the whole publish story, and so we're starting to bring in more of a DevOps story. So not only can you right-click publish, but you can even right-click and set up a whole CI pipeline and a deployment pipeline. So you can actually take that containerized app and have it automatically build and deploy into Azure for you.
Cool.
Yeah.
That's an awesome
There's
list.
A lot.
All right. So Mark has traversed across the large studio here and is ready to give us a demo.
Yes, I am.
All right.
Talking about the Big I integration story, I just want to start out by talking a little bit about how you might go about connecting with an Azure service. In this case, I've created an Azure service with some blob storage in it. Before we started, and I'm just sitting here at the front page of a brand new ASP.NET web project. As you can see, I have this new nifty overview page, which is showing me some things that I might want over the lifecycle of this project to do to the project. And one of the options here is this new service capabilities tab. You'll see underneath here, I have a Azure storage option, okay? And I'm just gonna hit that thing up. And I can see this MWT demo Azure storage account that I've created earlier. I'm just going to go ahead and add that. And now while it's working here, you can see it's adding the necessary NuGet package support right into my project. So I don't need to have to know ahead of time what kinds of things I need to add to my project to get connected to this storage stuff. The Big I integration is taking care of business for me and adding those packages for me right into the project. And here they come. There's quite a few of them.
So have there been enhancements to this dialogue since 2015?
Well, here's one big enhancement that you're about to see. So you'll see that it's taken me straight to this useful web page. So the first place that it's taken me is right into a piece of documentation that helps me do exactly what I need to do. So I'm not going to be left hanging in space here. Okay, so that's really useful. I've added all those references, but what do I do next? I know right away what I do next here. I dive right into doing some code, and it's going to glide me right into doing what I need to do. So first off here, I'm going to add the necessary usings to my project. So I'm going to crack open here controllers. I'm going to open up that values controller. And you see it's given me on that web page quite a recipe book of stuff. So it tells me what usings I need to add. And then right away, I can just scroll on down here and get the next piece. So it tells me what I need to do to create the Cloud Configuration Manager and Cloud Storage account. I don't have to mess about too much there. No trouble. Okay. Give me another moment, and I'll have the necessary client and container. And then what I'm going to want to do is, I've got a whole bunch of things that I uploaded there into that blob storage account. I've got some blobs already up in the cloud there. And what I want to do is iterate over those. So you can see that the guidance code is giving me right away what I need to do to iterate across that set of blobs that I have already created. I can copy that code and reuse it right away. And what I'm going to need to do here is I'm just going to go ahead and create a vehicle for me to return these. Just a list of blobs that I'm going to create. I'm going to put that in a new list of strings. So I'm ready to collect those things. And then each time that I find a blob, what I really want to do is add to that blob list. So this is all that I'm having to remember here. So I'm going to add and here you can imagine this is just me getting started on learning how to do this stuff. And then right down at the bottom here, instead of returning this template string from the template, I'm going to return the new array that I just created. So here's my blob list, to array. And I should now be ready right off the bat. And this is literally from a standing start. I knew nothing. I'm fully integrated now. I hit up F5. And I'm going to fire up the web service that I just created. And it's going to go right away and connect to my blob storage. It's going to retrieve that list of blobs that I just created. And I'm going to be ready. Just one moment now. Just have to wait for the web server to spin up for a moment. It's going to go and create those, connect to the Azure service, collect that set collection of blobs, and it's going to bring it right on back to me. So if I just say, and that's great. So anyhow, I'm going to flip right over now. So essentially what we got there was we were able to bring back a whole bunch of values from a piece of blob storage, and it worked just fine. There was a little bit of a problem there at the end, but you get the idea. I didn't have to understand anything about that blob storage architecture to get started. I didn't have to understand anything about what I needed to do. I got the instructions that I needed right from the start page. I went right on in, got the code that I needed to get productive quickly, and retrieved it straight away. Everything just works. So. Right. That's the big eye integration. So, Anthony, if you want to.
Yeah, I was just going to throw out, you asked what's new. So, there's a couple new elements new in those wizards. So, one, Azure's mobile app is a new service that they support on Azure App Service. So, those now have their own wizards. So, if you're building a mobile app, you can get a no code backend for doing things like auth, push notifications, and a variety of other services kind of all come bundled into one for you. And that wizard will just kind of inject all of the references you need and give you a startup template to get started. And then also, ASP.NET Core being new to really kind of 2017, we have support for several of these different services in ASP.NET Core as well. Oh, so you can kind of get started into ASP.NET Core.
Right. Thanks, Anthony. And so now I'd like to pivot a little bit. We talked about how Visual Studio is going to make you faster and more efficient in the regular everyday coding tasks that you do. So just want to talk about a few of those. I'm going to talk a little bit about editing. I'm going to talk a little bit about debugging. And I'm going to talk a little bit about navigation. And let's see how that goes. So I have a little project that I've spun up here. And the first thing I'm going to do right now is go and open a file. And you'll notice I'm doing something new here. So this, if we just do a quick zoom in, is a new feature that we have in Visual Studio 2017. And that is the new go-to feature. You'll notice it's letting me go straight to a file. Okay. So I'm using this query syntax here, which I could get some help on if I wanted to figure out about where I can go. I'm going to go right on to a file. And the file that I'm going to open up here is patient info view.xaml.cs here. Okay. And you see it takes me, if I zoom back out again, straight to that file. Okay. So just to really fast way of getting about. And you're going to see me use that technique several times during the demo. So getting around using that new go-to stuff is really, really easy. The first thing that I'm going to show you here...
Make it easier to go to methods and...
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And so, for instance, if I bring that guy back up again, if I was to look for... You can see there's a patient info method in my file here.
Okay, cool.
There you go. I can get right onto it straight away if I want to get there that quickly. And I can get right back to where I was. And you notice there that... You may have noticed that it transitioned to another file there. That's actually a previewing feature. So when you're browsing your way through files like this, it's really easy to get around and know that you're getting to the right place before you commit, before you take that step of pressing return to get right where you want to go. So I'm going to go back to our patient info. Info view, .xaml.cs. And I'm going to show you a little bit about some of the new things we've added for editing code. Now, IntelliSense, I hope, is everybody's best friend, right? One of the things we've done for IntelliSense is to make life easier when you're exploring a code base. So here we are in a code base. Let's imagine I've been asked to tweak this patient calendar in this view, okay? And I'm not particularly familiar with the control. I don't really know what I'm doing here. That means that I'm going to do what a lot of developers do. I'm going to lean hard on IntelliSense. That's what I need to do. So I'm going to start out and hit my patient calendar. And the sharp-eyed amongst you will have noticed as I did that there's something new going on. And this was something that Casey Uhlenhuth showed in her demo yesterday. I'm going to go a little bit deeper into that today. So you can see that we've got this new IntelliSense filtering feature. Now, we know that a lot of people use IntelliSense to browse their way around. So I might, for instance, be moving around reading those documentation links as they come up. Okay, but I'm not quite sure what I'm going to select. I know I need to do something that's going to set me up for configuring the way that this control is going to show months and dates, and it's some sort of display thingy, but I don't quite know what it is. So I know it's looking up above at the code above. I can see that it's likely to be a property, just the way this control seems to work. So I think I'm looking for a property, and I'm going to go ahead and Alt-P, because I can get that shortcut right from the bar there, and I'm going to say display. Oh, look, this is really easy now. I can go right ahead and see that display mode is the one that's going to give me how the calendar displays months and years and so forth. I'm going to select that guy. So much easier for exploring. Okay, so when you're exploring a big API surface, this is gold. And I'm just going to finish that up. And this is going to be I think this is an enum. Oh yeah, so it is. You see how this goes, right? I'm looking for enumerations of calendar modes, and I can get the one that I want right away. Get down to month. And I'm in business. I've actually done the coding that I wanted to do.
Nice.
That, I hope you agree that makes exploring an API a ton simpler than it used to be.
Yep.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Now, just to transition here, what I'm also going to do is, when I write code, I don't know about you, I occasionally create bugs. When you create bugs, you need a really great debugging experience to make those things go away. So I'm going to fire up this actual application here. And I'm going to go ahead and create a new appointment. I'm going to select myself a candidate for a new appointment. I'm going to hit select. Oh boy, what's happened here? So bad news, I've got an exception. Good news, my new best friend, the new exception helper, is going to help me absolutely fix that exception. Some things to notice here. It used to be that you used to have to drill in a couple layers to get to this kind of inner exception detail. The new exception helper dialog is bringing all of that stuff right to the surface. Okay, so you don't have to drill, you don't have to click, you don't have to mess about. You find out that you've got an argument out of range exception in an inner exception here. If I just back out a little bit, I can see that I've made a real rookie mistake here. Here in this loop, I've actually got a count of 5 here, and that's going to be way out of range. I actually made a typical off by one error. I'm going to use the power of edit and continue here, and I'm just going to drag my instruction pointer up to that first line, and I'm going to carry on. And lo and behold, fixed my bug.
Very right. Nice.
much easier because we brought the information you needed right into your face. Okay, we brought it right to the top of the stack. Much, much simpler, much more straightforward than it would have been before. I'm going to stop that debugging session now. And suppose my next job, you know, my having fixed this awesome bug that I managed to create, my next job is I've got to do a little bit of work refactoring. Okay, so we know that a lot of people spend time in large code bases refactoring and working their way through things. And what they need to do often is to sort of do a little bit of a risk assessment of the work that they're about to do. I'm sure you've done this before. You're in a big code base, particularly if you're not the owner of every single piece of it, which is often going to be the case. And once again, I'm going to use our excellent go-to tool. And I'm going to go to my base view model in my desktop application. Now notice again, I just want to quickly draw your attention to the fact that I can quickly move through these items and not have to leave a trail of destruction behind me as I search for the right thing. Okay, I can move through these. You can see that it's transitioning my code in the background. The one that I want is this one. I'm happy. I'm going to go there. Okay. So here in my base view model, I'm thinking about doing some refactoring work. Now, I want to figure out where that base view model is referenced. Okay, so to see what kind of damage control that I might need to do later. And so I'm going to do the typical thing. I'm going to do a find all references and figure out where this thing is referenced. And my goal here is to see, you know, how things are likely to be in terms of the amount of work that I'm likely to have to do to make sure that I've done this right. Now notice here that the new find all references window is not like your granddaddy's find all references menu, okay?
Not this even like my current find all references window, let alone my granddaddy's.
Okay, so what you're seeing here is, I've used one of these group bys. Now these group bys let me structure my returns.
So what you're saying is it's just gonna show me all the places in one easy to use view and I don't have to dig.
Sure. So in my current Visual Studio 2015 find all references window, this is just a flat list. You've got absolutely no clue where anything is disposed. If you read the enormous list of returns, you might just about be able to figure it out. But the structure is super obvious to me now. Because what I've done is I've been able to switch, in fact, one of the pre-canned groupings that we have available here lets me switch by definition then path. And what that's letting me do here, you can immediately see I can see I've only got I've got six of these references, as you might expect, in the view models. But I've also got this helper method in an infrastructure model. Okay, so if I back out here, you can see that's in a navigation helper. And as I hover over that, you can see I even get clues as to what the code is going to be a few lines either side of that.
And in now this case, infrastructure and view models, those are folders in the solution?
That's correct, yeah. Okay. So, I mean, and notice that I can actually completely customize this thing. I've got a bunch of pre-canned ones here. But I've also got the option, if I right-click, to group according to whatever of the fields I want, okay, in whatever order I want. If you have a very particular task where you want to do that, you're absolutely able to customize this thing and get what you need. We're also seeing, you'll notice that you're seeing, for many languages, code colorization here as well. So you're absolutely getting the same kind of feedback that you would in the editor about what kinds of things you're seeing. So that's a big boon as well. So this gives you the confidence to know that you can go to the place you want to go to and that you've got to the right place. Another final thing here, I'm just going to do a little scenario for you. So imagine I'm halfway through that task of refactoring my my view model, and I've got my find all references results here. I'm just going to go ahead and pin them. And now I've decided, actually partway through it, I'm a little bit concerned that I might need to do something with this observable view model as well. Now, in the past, you couldn't have two find all references windows. Now you can. What I did was hit this keep results button here, and I can just go ahead, do a quick find all references here, and bingo, I can have two. So now I've got my observable model list. So look, what we know is a lot of people use these find all references lists almost like a to-do list as you're working through a task. You're doing a refactoring like this, you probably need to know whether you've got to the end of your task. And you don't want to lose that list just because you need to dive off into another direction for one of the questions you need to ask along the way. Now you can keep your results, keep them hanging around, and everything's good.
All right. Very cool. So let's take a couple questions before we give Sean a chance to get some camera time. Mir017 asks about Visual Studio collaboration with ReSharper.
We do a lot of it, yeah, actually. Mm-hmm. In this release in particular, one of the things that we worked with Resharper on was performance. And so startup time, Kathy, I'll talk a little bit more about that, but we work really closely with them on just how they integrate with the product because, you know, as anybody knows, it's a really popular extension that offers value in a variety of different areas of the product and different surface areas. So we really try to work closely to make sure that we're helping them take advantage of all of the kind of infrastructure and capabilities to be as fast and as smooth as they can. So developers at the end of the day get the best experience, both Visual Studio on its own as well as Visual Studio with Resharper.
Cool. And then Linux Fan asks, will there be a Visual Studio version available for Linux? This question was asked yesterday of Julie and John in the interview thing that they did after the keynotes. And I think Julia said that we find that most people building for Linux are actually developing on Windows or on Mac. So those are the two places that we're going to focus on now. And then, of course, make sure that the code they write runs great on Linux.
Yeah, and you know there was a demo of VS Code on Linux yesterday. Scott mm-hmm. did a demo of that. So I think you know there's certainly some interesting capabilities there as well.
Right. And then Eugene asks, when will VS Code add support for C# 7? Now, before you answer that question, Sean, why don't you tell us what's new in Visual Studio Code, and then you can get to Eugene's excellent question.
Awesome. Okay, that sounds great. Well, okay, I'm on my PC here in our normal way. I'm just going to start up Visual Studio Code from the command line terminal here. And so I remember what to say. I've got a little markdown document here that sort of summarizes what's new.
But code just can do markdown?
It can do markdown.
Hey, I might have a new markdown editor. Sweet.
It can also have extensions that improve the markdown experience. And so this is an extension that quickly transformed my markdown into a Reveal.js presentation. So I can quickly sort of jog through the notes. So, like, I just start off by saying it's amazing to me that Visual Studio Code's a pretty new product. And just under a year ago, we actually launched the beta of Visual Studio Code at the last Connect event, the 24th of November last year. At that point, we open sourced the product and we added extensibility capabilities in a marketplace to the product, along with a set of other features, but they were the big announcements of the day. And since then, we've been moving really fast, and I thought I'd quickly touch on the momentum behind the product before digging into what's changed since then. So we continuously update the product. Every month we've released an update since we first shipped, and we're now at 1.8 is the current version we're working on. And you know, we're now approaching 4 million unique installations, so a lot of people have tried the product out. And I think what's even more satisfying for us is every month over 1 million people are working with the product and using it. So those are really big milestones for us. But of course, another maybe even more important milestone for the users is the amount of extensions and the creation of value for the users of VS Code. And you know, we've got well over 2,000 extensions now, and I'm just popping up the extension panel here in Visual Studio Code. It's great that that's on screen. And one of the things you can see is when we talk about extensions, they can be very, very rich extensions. So, you know, we added C and C++ support with language services. Docker support was demonstrated in the keynote, where you get great support for Docker files, Docker Compose files, and the registry itself. One of the other cool stories is we added, in conjunction with IBM, Red Hat, and the Eclipse J team, support for Java into Visual Studio Code, and that leverages the underlying Eclipse JDT environment. So really, it's an example where Visual Studio Code can sort of embrace existing code bases and provide that intelligence in the product. And obviously, I've got another one there, Python, which has been another really popular language in Visual Studio Code. But the real point is there's been a huge amount of innovation and extensions. I'm going to talk about that more, but it's one of the core tenets of Visual Studio Code is it's a product that you can extend to work with the languages, the runtimes that you want. And they can do a variety of things, like this presentation mode I'm showing you. So let's talk about the core product and some of the features that we've added. I'm actually going to demo the majority of these. But one of the things we changed since the last Connect is we've moved also to make our daily Insiders build available. That's the build of Visual Studio Code we use ourselves in the team. It's the fastest place to see new features. It's the fastest place to, if any issues are raised, we can fix them often within a day. So the Insiders build is out there for everyone, and I'll show you that in a minute. You know, when we were here last year for Connect, one of the things I sort of promised is we would add some of the core editor features people were missing, code folding, editor tabs. Those things are now in the product, as you'd expect. And we also added things like an integrated terminal in, and the ability to sort of jazz up the experience with icons through folder trees. And we've actually improved our extension gallery and recommendation service significantly. You know, the idea that you can type in, you know, I want to create a .cs file, C# file, like was asked in the question, we'll instantly say, hey, look, you need an extension to make that a great experience. And I can answer that question now. The C# extension was updated to 1.5 about 2 days ago, and it includes C# 7.0 support.
All right.
So that's a go and download that, update that now. Dustin's done a great job there. So recommendations in an improved gallery. And you know, I'll just show you even when I'm talking about that. Now you can see the details of an extension internally within the product. You can rapidly look at the contribution that makes, the key bindings, any custom settings, how you'd configure the extension. And you can also see what changes have been made in recent updates. And there's also this view, dependencies view, where you can quickly search, so I'm going to go PHP pack. We have the ability to have an extension pack. This is for PHP developers. This includes both the debugger and IntelliSense. And you can quickly see, oh yeah, those two things are there. Hit install, would I like to continue? And a few seconds later, those three extensions will be installed. I reload the environment. I now have a PHP environment all set up. Okay, so now what I want to do is give you one other little thing in the marketplace. Another thing we recently added is we realized that everyone comes from different places. And so we've really tried to make it easier to make it easier to sort of adopt and use Visual Studio Code in conjunction with other things. Oh, I can't spell. I'll just do that. And so we now have a category called key maps in the marketplace, and this is where you can get things like Vim binding modes. You can get an Atom key map or a Sublime key map. And again, you can just click here and you can see what are the key bindings and the commands that work, and instantly install that, and VS Code will adopt that sort of key binding, so it's a familiar environment for you to use. Since I didn't go to the category, there's also obviously a very popular one, which is Vim. Okay, so that's a little bit on extensions. Let me go back here. So, okay, we've also included things like horizontal layouts inside the editor. And a much richer extensibility API has evolved since we first launched the product. And one of the big parts of that is we made publicly available something called the Language Server Protocol, which enables you to integrate any backend language service into Visual Studio Code in a common way, using the implementation of that backend language server, like the Java example I gave you. And we've seen that adopted even by Eclipse Orion and Eclipse Che as well, so many people in the industry are getting behind that. But enough talking, I'm here to give you a quick demo. Let's do it. So I'm going to drop out of this one, and I'm now going to drop into a demo, and I mentioned I'd use the Code Insiders. So this is our nightly build. One of the cool things about it is it runs side by side with the other version of Visual Studio Code. And in here you get to see the early features. So for instance, in here, there's some little subtle things, like we have a new title bar format on Mac OS here. This build includes something called automatic typing acquisition, which means JavaScript IntelliSense just works. There's no additional steps you need to do. And it also includes a hotly anticipated feature called Hot Exit that you see in things like Notepad++ and Sublime, where either if the product crashes, which it never does, or you choose just to be in note-taking mode, you don't have to save files. It'll keep those in temporary file storage. So really one of those hot features from the other products. But I've set this version of Visual Studio Code up in a slightly different way, and I wanted to talk about that, because one of the key values of the product I sort of talked about is it'll really work in the work style that you like. So for instance, in this case, I've got it set up to auto-save my files. So every time I do an edit after a small pause, files get saved to disk. When I'm coding, I prefer a different font than our default font, and I'm using the Ferrocode font here in a slightly bigger font size, because my eyes are getting a little old. But one of the other things that's really cool about this particular font is it has support for ligatures. So what I want to do is I'm going to quickly open settings file in this ligatures file. I'll show you now the layout option I was talking about, horizontal layout as well. And so I can quickly say, okay, font ligatures true. And you can see in here that instead of rendering, I'll just actually turn it on. Instead of rendering sort of fonts as, the sort of standard equation formats, as individual characters. Ligatures mean they sort of combine together. So it's just an example of how you can really make VS Code as an editor. Work the way that you like to work. As simple as that, and you're seeing autosave really work there as well. The other thing I want to use for this quick demo is I like the Z shell for my integrated terminal, and you can plug in any integrated terminal on any platform, so PowerShell, for instance, on Windows, or you can use the Bash shell. I like WordWrap. I like indent guides in my code. I like to see the white space. And when I'm using diff views, I want that to be, instead of side by side, I want to have an inline view. So just some settings I can set up either for a workspace or for a user. And the real point here is it's super configurable. Okay, so now that I've got that set up, why don't I sort of drop into the core demo? And one of the things that we announced at Connect, or one of the brand new extensions, is something called SQL Server. So you can see if I go in my extension view here, let's make this a little wider for you. Oh, come on. We introduced two data things. We have Azure Data Lake, which is about big data. And then we also have MS SQL, which is our standard SQL support, but for SQL on Linux. So I have MS SQL here installed, and I'm in a SQL file. And one of the things that's contributed now is the ability to connect to a database. And so I'd already set up a connection profile, but this is connecting to a database. You may wonder what database, so here's my opportunity to quickly fire up the integrated terminal. And if I go Docker PS, you'll see that I have a Linux SQL Server image on this machine running. So that's one of the super cool things, is able to just pull down the image from the registry, configure it with a couple of command line attributes, and then I've got a fully operational version of SQL Server here running in a Docker container. And it's really easy for me to leverage now from my app. And so many apps have data, this is a nice development experience. So
instead of having to switch context, leave here, go fire up SQL Server Management Studio just to run a simple query,
yep.
This seems like it would be a lot more convenient.
Yeah, simple query, administer the database, and obviously you can store all those things as source code. So now that I've got SQL Server, oh, hang on, did I just get IntelliSense against the schema of the database? So, you know, it's a rich language service, and, you know, with IntelliSense now I can easily fill in the rest of this query. Okay. Yep, okay. And you'll see, oh, that squiggle disappeared. That's because there's live linting as well. So it's a language service that offers IntelliSense, linting, all based upon the schema and information in the database. But then you can also, let me just get rid of the terminal.
Does it rely on a particular version of SQL Server?
No, it works against SQL Azure, standard SQL servers, and obviously the new SQL Server on Linux.
So 2016, 2014, 2012, it's all good.
Yeah.
Excellent.
So now I'm going to, now I can actually run the query against the database. So I can see a results grid in there. And this is an example of where we're just trying to bring some of the core development things back into the inner loop for the developer. It's just enough integration for some of the things that you really want in your code debug cycle. So I'll do one more little quick demo here. You'll see I've sort of cheated below. I got my comments. Oh, I should say, you know, we're an editor, so I could really cheat. You know, the things you'd expect for commenting and all the sort of standard editor modes work for SQL. But now I can go delete. And I can go from, and again, I'm getting rich IntelliSense. So here it's spotted the schemas that are inside the database. I can, I should have pushed tab. test schema, dot, employees, and then I can keep on going and it will give me IntelliSense all the way through. Turns out I actually don't want to delete anything in the database right now. I just wanted to show that little bit of IntelliSense. The grid's pretty rich. You can expand it. Horizontal view is great for large result sets, obviously. That's why I've got it in wide results. That's why it's in horizontal window mode here. And you can save it directly to disk as a CSV or JSON file.
Oh, cool.
So some cool stuff there for the SQL developers. But, you know, we're also a development tool, so it's great to be able to sort of write some SQL and iterate on your SQL and get it right with those assist tools. Let's drop in some code. And so what I've got here, I guess I could do the same navigation. I've got CRUD, which is a basically, surprisingly enough, a Node.js app that does create, update, and read from a database. And so all this is a very simple sample from the website. I'm going to quickly go across to the Git view, and I've made one change from the existing sample. You can see my inline diff here, where I've added a row counter. And what I want to do is I'm actually just going to run it. So what you'd expect to do, sorry, I'll just navigate back there. I'm just going to hit F5. And what VS Code is going to ask me is, oh, it's a Node app, okay? I need to configure a launch configuration. We've tried to make this easier, and all I need to do now is just tell it what the starting app is. So again, autosave's on, hit F5, boom, drops into a breakpoint. Again, this is the evolved editing experience that you see in VS Code, where you can really just do more than just pure editing. And of course, I can step through the code, and you can see in the output window it's happening. That's actually not a behavior I want. Another thing I can do things like, let's have a conditional breakpoint. Let's only break on the sixth item. And to really force this issue, because I'm running short on time, I'll restart. And you'll see, let me clear the console as well. If I do an F5 now, boom, straight up to that sixth iteration. So you get this great experience. Again, we have IntelliSense now in the repo as well. So really good support for the rapid debug cycle. The new thing that we've integrated inside the editor is obviously the ability to work with data as well. And we've still got this rich Node and other editing experience. So VS Code, really the goal is that, you know, it adapts to your work style. However you want to set up the environment, the key bindings you want, the look and feel you want, the way you want the editor to behave. It really should work with any language and runtime you want. I just showed you SQL and Node and JavaScript. I showed you working against the SQL Server for the runtime or the Node Server locally, and you can use the cloud as you saw in the demo online. And it also works with any workflow that you desire. So there's just enough integration to make you productive, but you can still use all the other tools in your tool chain. So, quick summary, let me tell you what's coming next. So I'll go back to my little presentation here. Okay, so coming soon, improved JavaScript IntelliSense and hot exit support. I mentioned that's already in the insiders build. That'll come out really soon. We're working on really improving our HTML, CSS, and JavaScript editing scenarios, which is core to the web dev scenario. And one of the other questions I've seen come up is, hey, look, it's great that you guys have Git support, but will you offer support for things like Team Foundation version control and other version control? Yeah, we're building up an extensibility API for version control providers as well. So they're a critical part of the developers in a loop, and we'll make sure that that works well inside Visual Studio Code. That one's a little further out. Our roadmap, always, and our iteration plan, always on GitHub. I'd really encourage you to sort of see the keynote demo from Chris, where he showed Docker, showed working with Azure, our cloud backend, showed being able to clone a repository, lots of great features in there. Wade also has a video where you can quickly see an overview, a more in-depth overview of Visual Studio Code. And yeah, there's lots of ways to reach out and contact us. So that's a quick lap around what's new in Visual Studio Code.
Thanks. Kathy,
yes.
Let's talk about setup and perf. Obviously, when we release a new version of Visual Studio, mm-hmm. there's all kinds of new stuff in the editor. That's to be expected. But one of the things that we've really focused on this time is overall performance and the setup experience.
Yeah.
So just to preface, Visual Studio 2017 RC available for download today.
Yes.
Highly encourage everybody to download
Yesterday.
It, install it,
yes.
play around with it. But there's some questions. John asks, yep. will 2017 nice. RC need to be uninstalled before installing RTM? Jim asks, can I have 2015 and 27 RC installed on the same machine at the same time?
So yes, you can have 2015 and 2017 on the same machine.
Yep.
And then in terms of going from RC to RTM, we're going to make it a lot easier for you this time and do some cleanup for you. It used to be pretty painful, and so I hope that folks are going to have a really good experience this time around. So yeah, like you mentioned, we've done a lot in performance this time. Visual Studio 2017 is really just a lot faster all around. So whether you're starting up Visual Studio, which is now three times faster from a cold start compared to 2015.
Which, given how long it sometimes takes to start, is actually a huge amount.
Definitely, yeah. Or if you're loading a solution, it's about two times faster than 2015. And everything from typing to debugging as well, too.
What did we do to make it faster?
So basically what we've done is we've deferred a lot of the things we used to do at startup, and we've been doing that for a while now. Mm-hmm. But we're able to move a lot of the other things out of your way so that Anthony, as Anthony mentioned, your code is up and running, you're doing some basic navigation, you're understanding, you're using some of those cool features that Mark just showed us too to get to work, and you're not waiting for extensions to load or things in the background to happen. So.
Okay.
And we have this really great video up on Channel 9 with a side-by-side comparison of 2015 and 2017, loading the .NET compiler project, so Roslyn. It's got 130 projects, 4 million lines of code, and you can see that it finishes about twice as fast as 2015.
Nice.
So if you don't believe me, you go check it out.
Yeah. when people install it, there's a new setup experience. In the past, you know, you got default and then custom, and if you go to custom, there's a giant list, you know, you just either don't install C++ or you just do select all, right?
Yep.
It wasn't really easy to figure out, do I really need all this stuff? I'm a web guy, why do I need WPF? I'm a WPF guy, why do I need, you know, other stuff.
Exactly, yeah. So we've also made the install experience a lot faster and a lot more tailored to what you need. Mm-hmm. So what we've basically done is we've componentized Visual Studio and we've broken up these really large chunks. Like you said, before you had like, you know, maybe 10 choices you can make, and those were really big buckets of features. Yes. And frameworks and SDKs and things.
And it was just easier to select all and then go away.
Exactly.
And come back.
Or not come back. I mean, like, not come back to the right. install experience. But so essentially what you're going to see if you're doing WPF apps, you're going to take the .NET desktop workload. And these workloads are really sets of features and components, frameworks, and SDKs that we've sort of tailored for you. So you really only install what you need to do your specific job. Mm-hmm. If you're building mobile apps, you're going to take one of the many mobile workloads that we have. You can pick one workload or as many as you need to do your job. And so this means that the install is going to be a lot faster too. Now, if you want just a lightweight version of Visual Studio, let's say you just want to use it to open up some code really quickly, mm-hmm. you could get started really fast with this new minimum install we have. It's just a couple minutes, really, and a couple hundred megabytes. And so with our new TextMate bundle support, which supports over 20 programming languages, you can get up and running really fast with colorization and completion and navigation really fast, too. Hmm. We also had this really interesting, I'm sure you've heard this, people go and get a cup of coffee, right, while they're waiting for the install to happen, and someone yesterday on Twitter said, the only downside to this new installer is I didn't even have time to go get that cup of coffee. And so I think it's really great, so it just speaks to how much faster it really is.
So they want us to add a slowdown feature.
That's right, slow down, I'm going to get my coffee.
Then it's less likely, my experience I had last week, I had to repave my machine again. And I was installing 2015, mm-hmm. and I decided, well, I'll do it from home, right? Because it takes a while.
Sure.
And the machine kept going to sleep. And surprisingly, when the machine's asleep, the setup pauses. So I had to keep waking up the machine, and right before I went to bed, I woke up the machine. It was still installing, and mm-hmm. then it went to sleep. And when I woke up the next morning, it still hadn't
still
finished,
going, yeah.
which is not Visual Studio's problem, of course.
Sure.
But, you know, again, it just goes to show if the setup happens faster, mm-hmm. then you know it's a much better experience.
Yep.
Just had to share my
exactly.
anecdote.
Oh yeah, yeah, definitely, yeah, yeah.
Okay, so talk to us a little bit more about Perf. Some of the things we've done. Where are we going to see it? What kinds of solutions?
Yeah, so we've also made some performance improvements, as I mentioned, in loading extensions later, too. We're also able to detect, we have some performance monitoring going on for extensions you have installed. So if you've got something that's running slow, maybe it's affecting your typing, which is you know, pretty bad, right? Mm. We'll actually let you know. Right above the editor, we have a gold bar that will pop up, and it'll say, hey, this extension's running slow. Would you like to disable it?
Do we let the extension creator know?
You know, that's part of our new culture here is that we're going to be reaching out to them. And that's the plan, right?
Right.
Because we really, like Anthony said, we want to make sure if you're using extensions, you have a great experience. And if you're not, you still have that same great experience, too.
And the extenders can actually, as yeah. they're developing their extension, they'll see it and they'll test it inside yeah. Visual Studio. They've got mm-hmm. the experimental hive where mm-hmm. they can run these and see how their extension's performing. And they get all the same information yeah. that the customer is seeing. So they yeah. can actually then go and take some of the information we've been posting out of the blog post on how they can defer their load, on how they can take advantage of some of the new performance hooks that they can use inside of VS.
Okay, mm-hmm. so if we're deferring things, if we're not loading everything up front, that means is a little bit of a additional hit when I actually go to use something. How do you manage that trade-off?
I think it depends. You know, it depends on how big your project, your solution, or your app is. Mm-hmm. You know, if you've got something that's a little smaller, of course, it's going to finish loading before you get to work, ideally. But you know, some of the things that you need right away should be available to you, even in a larger solution too.
Okay. Have we changed the model for extensions? Do all the 2015 extensions work in 2017?
Well, and as usual, that's up to the extension owners to kind of move their extensions forward too. So not really much has changed in
okay.
that. Yeah.
Okay. So I should just expect all the things that have been available to still be available?
I would hope so. Yes.
There is the one change that we did in the V6 manifest format. So that is one thing that extenders probably need to look out for. So their existing V6s do install in 2017, but there's been some format changes which actually help with some of the loading and help with some of the performance improvements. So it also helps with some of the install work that we've done. So they do need to look out for the new V6 requirements if they are using that for install.
And there is a good blog post up on the VS blog that goes through all of that. So if you're an extension author, it's definitely a good resource there.
Okay. So when, if I install, I pick a certain number of workloads, and then if I decide I want to do something, now I want to start getting into web or I want to do something else, I just go back into setup and select the new workload or uninstall a particular workload.
Exactly, yep. So the idea is maybe more workloads come online over time. Some workloads you'll find there'll be components that'll be updated within them too. So there's a new ASP.NET core preview workload that we just released too. So you'll see that light up in the new install experience too.
Okay, so what I traditionally do when people come to my toolbox show is I ask them some future-looking question because it just pops into my head. So I'm going to do that now.
Yeah.
So let's say that sometimes I do web, sometimes I do mobile, sometimes I do WPF, and I would like basically three different skins, if you will, where when I launch Visual Studio, I can decide which workloads get loaded. I'm now going to put on my mobile dev hat. Mm-hmm. So can I have a single instance of Visual Studio and tell it which workloads to load?
So right now you can't do that, but we've heard that a lot as we've talked to a lot of customers over the past several years. We've gotten to this point with the new install experience. It's something that we've heard is desirable and
is reasonably doable.
With this new componentization of Visual Studio and it's broken down into these smallest pieces, it's certainly more possible than it was before.
Okay, what enhancements have been made to the roaming experience? Because I've got Visual Studio running on two different machines at work and another machine at home, and we've got some roaming now.
Yeah.
Have there been new things added to the roaming experience?
So Anthony mentioned the roaming extensions.
Yeah.
Is there anything else?
There is an extension, a roaming extension manager extension. Does this build on that?
Yes, and we've brought that into the product since it was so popular.
Everybody likes to get it up and running quickly. You mentioned repaving your machine. You're not the only one. It happens to all of us. just to get to a clean state. And that kind of startup time, really, we've been trying to help make you more productive as quickly as you can. So the extensions you've used in the past, they're there. If you go to the extension manager, you see all the ones that you've historically used. And if there are some that you don't use that often, you don't want to have to have on every machine, you just say stop roaming and it won't move from. And we don't actually install the extension. We just remember the list of the ones that you use. So you can quickly go and get those that you need as you go. You mentioned other roaming stuff. So I talked a little about kind of roaming repository remotes. So we redesigned the start page in 2017 to get it to be less about news and promotion and more about functionality and kind of jumping into your code quickly. And one of the areas that we found in that kind of whole getting started sequence was getting back to the repositories I use often, and they're often on GitHub or on VSTS. And so what we do now is we remember the remote origins, or this kind of basically the server URLs of any of the repos you clone down to one machine, and we store it with your profile, so when you sign into that next machine, that list of repos are right there. You just click in and it immediately clones it down into your source repo directly, and you can get started and going. No more kind of going and finding all those URLs that you normally clone down, going into Team Explorer to manage those connections. It's all there kind of right there for you. And then, I don't know about you, but like I create a lot of class libraries, a lot of console apps for experimentation as I'm going. And there might be a couple of different project types across ASP.NET and console that are kind of broken up in the new project dialog. Well, so we have now a recent project templates list. So all the project templates you use frequently kind of stack up your new projects. You can kind of go back and create new console apps right off the bat without having to go into the new project dialog at all. And that creates the project for you, but then we roam that list. So those projects you're creating most often are there from you from device to device.
Awesome. All right, I think we got to wrap up, but one more question. Roland asks, will VS Code get all the go-to goodies from VS 2017? And let me bump that question up to how do you decide and how do you, what's your philosophy on what you should put into code? I mean, you could clearly put everything from Visual Studio 2017 into code and it wouldn't be code anymore. You could put almost none in. How do you decide the balance?
I think the shortest hand is, anything that we perceive that a developer does all the time to accelerate their code and be really productive, that's fair game to put into Visual Studio code. And so things like, you know, peak definition, go to definition, show all references. In fact, all of those things are in Visual Studio Code already.
Okay.
So in most of our core languages, whether it be Python, Go, obviously C Sharp, Node, JavaScript, TypeScript, they all support that set of functionality. So you can do things like you can hold down the command key and hover over something and you'll see its definition. You can click go to definition. You can do all the great navigate across files and load temp files without destroying your file history. Because those are things that you as a developer need to do all the time to be productive. And so that's how we really think about it. If it's something that you need to do all the time, it's fair game to bring into the tool. That's the sort of integration that VS Code excels at. That's why data's in there now that you sort of saw. That's why the version control stuff's in there now, because it's hard not to do those things as part of your sort of standard workflow. You're trying something, what was my diff, what was... That's how we think about that. But, you know, as far as other things like, you know, the design surfaces or connecting to emulators, that's where the tool chain becomes much more loosely coupled. And that's where this sort of being able to insert it into an existing tool chain really excels. So, yeah, things you do all the time.
All right, cool. All right, one last question for Mike. Can Visual Studio Code query SQLite databases?
Can Visual Studio Code, yeah, there's an extension out there for SQLite, and in fact, one of the things I didn't show, if you right-click on a file with a .SQL extension in Insiders, it'll show you all the different SQL providers. Okay. But I will tell you that the MS SQL one, the Data Lake one, are by far the best ones out there. They're open source extensions as well, so I expect many people in the community will start, you know, adapting the same sort of features for Postgres or for SQLite or for all those other things as well. But the SQL Server one is definitely the best today.
All right, cool. Thanks, guys. We're going to wrap up. Thanks for watching, and hope you stick around for the rest of the day. Thanks, guys.
Thanks.
Thank you. Thank you.